Hey, Counselor, I'm going to proceed. Ms. Ellsworth, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Jessica Ellsworth on behalf of the appellants, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
This appeal is about whether it is essential for the use or purpose of a snack food that it have the product configuration of Pocky, an elongated, thin biscuit stick with one flat end that's uncoated and one rounded end that's coated, and more than half but less than the entirety of the stick with a chocolate or cream coating. To ask that question is also to answer it. There is no way in which the undisputed facts in this case showed that it was essential to the use or purpose of a snack food to have this configuration.
Let me ask this. I understand where you're going with whether or not it is essential. And it isn't essential per se, because you can just get your fingers all gooked up with chocolate and eat it. But the Supreme Court has said in Qualitex, and this is, at least to my humble mind, a more helpful way of looking at it, that the functionality doctrine forbids the use of a product's feature as a trademark, where doing so will put a competitor as a significant disadvantage. Now, and that's at the page 169 of the U.S. reports. Seems to me, if we were to reverse, that would mean that the only cookie, and I'll call it a cookie, biscuit, whatever, that anyone, at least in the United States or any place where U.S. law applied, could eat without getting their fingers and face all gooky would be your product, because your product would be the only one that would have a stick attached to it. Now, why am I wrong about that? Is what I'm saying not relevant?
So, Your Honor, I think there are two things that I would like to say in response to that. The first is that the language that you quoted from the Qualitex opinion is about the aesthetic functionality test, which is a separate test of functionality from the utilitarian functionality test. Graphics distinguished those two tests and explained that that non-reputation related significant disadvantage was about aesthetic functionality.
I can press you on that. Your argument section on page 22 starts with saying only, quote, if it is essential to the user purpose, and that's dovetailing with what you're saying now. But that word only isn't in Qualitex. The word only isn't in prefix. And while it is true that Qualitex looked at an aesthetic, right, and the Second and Ninth Circuit cases you cite happen to involve aesthetics, I'm not aware of any precedent, certainly not from our court of the Third Circuit, that limits it or that uses the word only. So where do you get that limitation from, and why is that binding or persuasive upon us?
So, Your Honor, I think when you are looking at the language that the Supreme Court used in Traffics when it was talking about the inward formulation, which gets repeated in Qualitex as well, when something is essential to the use or purpose, putting meat on the bones of what that means is something that courts have struggled with over time. But the principles that I think emerge from looking at all of those cases is that courts are trying to figure out how to police this line between what's properly in the arena of trade dress or trademark and what's properly in the arena of patent law. And so they're looking to determine when there is something that is really, truly a useful product feature. It's not just a useful product, but the design itself is conveying some additional utility beyond the utility of the product itself.
Now we're talking, because the point of trade dress is not to protect everything. It's to protect against consumer confusion. It's a species of trademark, right? So is the consumer going to think this is really about branding, like the shape of a Hershey's Kiss or the stamp on an Oreo cookie, or not? And that dovetails with our earlier precedent. You know, we've got the American Greetings case, we've got Keen Corp, where we're asked to focus on whether it's related to the utilitarian function of the product or feature. If it's not, you know, incidental, arbitrary, ornamental, some of the cases say, then that can be protected. But the statutory words are functional, not essential. And those Third Circuit precedents I cited don't say essential, and I don't see anything in Qualitex. I see essential is one way to show that it's functional, but I don't see that that's the only way. So why shouldn't we be focusing on, is this not something aesthetically incidental or arbitrary that just serves a branding function. How is it that the stick shape serves this distinctive branding function that's not functional?
So, Your Honor, the first thing I would say in response to that is that the stick shape, the uncoated portion of the biscuit stick, is only one aspect of the overall product configuration. If the product configuration were claimed in the trade dress were just that stick, this might be a different question that would have a different analysis, but it is the overall configuration. And I think the Bowdoin case from the Seventh Circuit is the most useful.
Yeah, I'm not sure I follow that. Your folks made a decision, and it was a good decision, it seems to me, to put the chocolate-coated cracker, biscuit, cookie on a stick. Now, the only person that seems who may object, my grandson would not like that. He's 1 year old, and when he eats chocolate, it ends up in his diaper. I mean, it's everywhere. But assuming that we've got adults who want to be able to, maybe over lunch or whatever, eat a cookie biscuit and not get chocolate all over themselves, it helps to have it on a stick. And you made a decision, a well-informed decision, to do that so that folks who eat the pokey can do it without getting chocolate all over themselves. But you're saying that you're the only product that consumers can consume without getting chocolate all over themselves.
So Judge McKee, my answer to that is the second point to what I wanted to say to you earlier when you raised that same question about whether it's the only cookie. It is far from the only cookie. There are 30 examples in the record of biscuit and chocolate combinations, most of which involve some uncoated portion in which someone can pick up the cookie. We show 9 of them on page 33 of our brief.
I'm very familiar with Milano cookies, and my waistline would prove that. I have one in mind. But if they wanted to put it on a stick, why wouldn't they be able, as long enough, if they start configuring the Milano cookie in a way that is very long and slender and is very consistent with the way you've configured the pokey, that's very different. As Dr. Bieber said, maybe then we get into consumer confusion. But absent that, if it's got its own shape, kind of like a fiddle, I guess, on a stick, why shouldn't they be able to do it, to improve their product by fixing it so even if I don't pick it up by the chocolate end, I pick it up by the other end, then I get grease or goo or whatever it goes into the damn thing on my fingers. Why shouldn't they be able to do that?
Judge McKee, I think that if Pepperidge Farm wanted to put the mint Milano cookie or the Milano cookie, they wanted to add a stick on one end of it, it would not be a product configuration that would map onto our trade dress. Our trade dress covers a very particular width and length, a thickness of coating, a percentage that's uncoated and coated. And as the Herman Miller case that we cited in our recent 28J letter explains, when the product configuration is the overall product configuration, the court's analysis does not look at whether one particular feature might be functional or not. We think there's a real question about that.
You're saying that coated, uncoated portion, which is an interesting way of looking at it. I've never even heard of a pokey before today. So my question sounded in ignorance, forgive me. I'm going to make amends for that and go out and buy a pokey if I can find them with the stores being shut down. Is the stick edible? I just assumed the stick was not edible. It is.
I apologize for interrupting, Judge McKee. It looks like we lost.
We lost.
Yeah, counsel.
We lost your colleague, Mr. Dabney. Why don't we hold off until we
all
get
right,
him back?
Thank you. Just be a moment to get him back on.
No problem. Meanwhile, I've Amazon bring me a couple of cases of pokies.
You're trying the pepper or two.
Never heard of that either. I never heard of that either. Guess I'm not living right here. If I spent more time with my grandkids, I'd be able to eat all kinds of junk food. Ms. Ellsworth, you're in New York?
I'm in Washington, D.C., sir.
Washington, okay.
Craig, do we know what the problem was? Did the system kick him off or?
I'm not sure. I just sent him another email.
No, crashed.
Yeah.
Well, if he can't get in by video, he could phone in as
well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I will let him know that.
Apologies. Video technology has largely been working well, but.
It really has. Yeah. Yeah. Today's not. Yesterday it was my fault. My computer crashed. And it did again today, as a matter of fact. And it's a Mac.
By video, Ms. Ellsworth, or audio? Have you done money by video or audio?
I have done, I argued before this court by audio back in March, and I've done a couple federal circuit arguments also by audio, but this is my first one with video.
Okay.
You need okay, we have Mr. Dabney again.
Don't see him.
We're coming in right now.
Okay.
All right. It looks like he's able to connect via video again.
Great.
All right. Good.
Hi, Mr. Dabney. I was just asking Ms. Ellsworth the following question, and I'm not sure how much of it you heard, and we stopped when we realized we lost you before she answered it. And
I apologize for that, Your Honor.
Happened to me today. It happened to me yesterday. Don't worry about it. It's
never happened to me before. So I just knew before we got started that it must happen. During I apologize.
Okay. It's quite all right. I'm using a Mac too, and Macs so that's not supposed to happen with. My question was, I'm assuming, because I've never had a Baki, that the uncoded portion that you're, I think, very astutely describing it as the uncoded portion, but I'm assuming that's a stick. It's not biscuit material itself that is not coded, is it?
So Judge McKee, I think that's a mistaken impression on your part. It is a biscuit stick. So think of something that's shaped like a rod, the entirety of which is edible.
The entire Baki is edible.
A portion of it is then coded. People eat the entire thing.
Okay.
So it's not like a popsicle stick. It's not like a lollipop stick. This is an entire edible product. It's like a Kit Kat bar, Mitt Milano cookie. At the end of eating it, there may be some crumbs, but there is no stick that you're left holding.
Okay, that's very helpful.
It doesn't make it functional then. It seems like that trade dress makes it easier to hold, easier to consume, might even make it easier to share.
So, Your Honor, I would like to address each of those points that you raised, starting with the easier to hold point. And on the easier to hold point, I think the most important thing to start with recognizing is that the uncoated portion is just one part of the product configuration. So
right, but you don't have to hold it.
Uncoated portions.
Yeah, go ahead.
You could have an uncoated portion of any shape, size, biscuit. It doesn't look like Pocky, and it would not run afoul of our product configuration trade dress. It's like the handle in the Bowdoin coffee pot case.
Okay, but Ms. Ellsworth, I thought, by the way, your and your opposing counsel's use of visuals was very helpful in the brief, but pages 34 and 35 have a bunch of different photos of other particular trade dresses. And to my untutored eye, most of these other shapes look much more distinctive. Even the Milano has a little kind of scallop ridge on it. I mean, you know, I'm not quite sure that just the square of an Andes. Most of them are not, they didn't have to be shaped this way as a pretzel within a pretzel or a pretzel wheel or a bunch of triangles for a Toblerone bar. A stick is a much more generic kind of shape here. If there were some special twirling or whirl, of an identifying function, but it's not just that there are other ways to do it, but is the way that you did it distinctive enough such that it imparts this is being made by the Ozaki Glico company and someone else is really trying to rip off your reputation by shaping it the same way?
So, Your Honor, two points in response to that. The first is that the question about whether this is a basic food shape, that it, I think is what Your Honor is suggesting, that a rod is a basic food shape. That is a disputed fact. And you can see this in the record at Appendix 2722, because our expert explained that most food shapes, the more common food shapes in the U.S. food industry, are round, circular, or rectangular.
It reminds me of a candy cane.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
That reminds me of a candy cane. They're round, they're long, they're, there's nothing really distinctive about it, except that many different manufacturers make the same product.
So, Your Honor, in response to that, I think you're asking about questions that hint at the a different part of the trade dress analysis, which is whether something has acquired secondary meaning. Now, in order to get our trade dress, which we got back in 1989, the PTO had to agree that we had acquired secondary meaning in our product. And there is record evidence in the summary judgment briefing from Bruce Isaacson, who conducted a consumer survey that found that hockey is actually identified as a branded product. Those questions, though, don't relate to functionality. Functionality is a different prong. And we know that the PTO thinks that all sorts of snack foods are entitled are non-functional and are entitled to trade dress protection. That's why Hershey Kiss has trade dress protection, and Goldfish crackers, Milano cookies, Hershey bars, Toblerone bars, all of these, because they are a configuration that someone has come up with as a matter of design choice, what length to make it, what size to make it, what proportion of chocolate or other ingredients to use. All of those are design choices that companies can make. If a company makes a design choice, it then acquires secondary meaning in that particular design choice, and there is a likelihood of confusion with someone else's product, it can bring a trade dress suit. And that's exactly what we did.
What is distinctive about your product, though, as I understand it, is the part at the top where you can hold the product. Am I correct about that?
Well, what is distinctive about our product is the entirety of the product design. That's why
all edible foods that seem to appear the like would have the same protection. I mean, the only thing distinctive about it is the top, it seems to me, because the lower portion is a round piece of chocolate. Why? I don't understand how that gets this trademark protection. I thought it was the handle, the top, that is distinctive. Am I wrong about that?
So, Your Honor, I think there may be some confusion. There are not any other products in the record anywhere other than Pepero and the products made by our licensee that have this shape. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of products that are out there in the snack food industry. There are dozens and dozens of products that combine biscuit and chocolate. Many of them do have trade dress protection, but not all of them. Some of them are, as just Viva suggested, some of them are simply too common of a shape. I think that an ordinary chocolate chip cookie, for example, is something that no one can get trade dress protection in because it's not perceived as branded, and there may be functional reasons that something is baked as a circle. But there is not record evidence that shows that the decisions about how to produce Pocky flow from really utilitarian design choices, as opposed to flowing from a desire to make something that looks fun and different and innovative, which is what Pocky is.
Wait a second. I mean, you take an Oreo, and it's obvious the reason the Oreo was stamped with the Oreo logo was to brand it as an Oreo. But when we talk about the reason why yours is shaped the way that it is, you know, it is quite important that you've used advertising materials that tout utilitarian advantages. You don't get it on your fingers. There are utilitarian properties to the unpatented design elements here. And the utility patent to the ultra slim manufacturing method is not relevant to most of the Pocky. Ultra slim is this tiny fraction of them. So of those four factors, you do have their alternative designs available, but the other factors make it seem like they weigh in favor of, you know, this is how you've been selling it. This is why it came up. This is the history of Pocky. It's in your client's corporate history of Pocky as described. It has a handle and it makes a fun snap. And that's connected to the use of the biscuit.
Parents love it.
So Judge Bibas, I'd like to start with the first of those factors, which is the 2014 patent. Let's be clear, this 2014 patent is a manufacturing method patent. It does not claim a trade dress that has existed since 1966. This patent is not remotely like the one that the Supreme Court addressed in Traffic.
Right. I think it's distinguishable. The patent comes a long way at the end of the process. It's not at the beginning, and you're trying to use this to extend it. I mean, that was traffics. Let's agree that if we think the traffics is a red herring for the distinctive patent claim that was a part of yours. But in terms of the factors, the other factors here, can you help us weigh the
factors? Yes, I can. Let's start with the advertising. And I think it's very important when you look at advertising to focus on whether the advertising is actually advertising the product or the design of the product based on its utilitarian advantage. And let me just use two of the cases that Latte cites repeatedly to show what advertising about a utilitarian advantage looks like. In the CTB case from the Fourth Circuit earlier this year, the question was whether a chicken feeder was functional. There was a patent that specifically claimed a particular spoke profile for the chicken feeder, and the company's advertising material touted that this design would let birds get out of the pan easily. It didn't say we're selling a chicken feeder, or it didn't say we're selling a chicken feeder by pointing to characteristics of its chicken feeder that were like everyone else's. Most of what the district court pointed to here is about the fact that Pocky is easy to consume. It's convenient. It can be shared. That is a characteristic of a snack food product and not this design. And the functionality doctrine plays a very particular role in deciphering those two. The flexible steel case that Latte cites, I think, makes the same point. There was a patent that claimed an improvement in having a scalloped leading edge to a belt fastener because it would reduce wear, it would improve the life. And that's exactly what the advertising said. Our design is better because we have this patented scalloped edge.
But I don't think we have looked at that. I mean, I was a little surprised when I read our own Third Circuit patent. In American Greetings, we treated the writing on the tummy of the Care Bear as functional, because it engenders certain warm and fuzzy feelings towards the Care Bear. So we're not supposed to take this very narrow engineering approach to what is functional, right? If it serves the function of the Care Bear to make people have certain warm and fuzzy feelings, that can be, that's a functional part of the product.
So Your Honor, I think the Care Bear's case is a good one for you to focus on, but even there, what the court said was that the tummy graphic played a utilitarian role in helping children express their feelings. It wasn't just that it was a stuffed animal, but it had a particular additional benefit, and that the particular graphics used, the court said, were the, quote, best ones to convey certain feelings. So there was a real sense in which the advertising was promoting this particular design as carrying a utilitarian benefit, even in the stuffed animal world. In our world that we're working on in this case, documents that say Pocky is an easy to eat product, you can take it on the go, that doesn't differentiate Pocky from a Hershey's Kiss, a Kit Kat, a Snickers bar, Goldfish crackers, or anything else. It's simply advertising that Pocky is a snack food, because there are lots of people like Judge McKee who don't know Pocky. And so they might, without indicators that it's a snack food, they aren't sure whether it's actually on a stick, like a lollipop, what exactly it is. That sort of advertising is not the sort of advertising any court has relied on. And I would—
let me ask this, Ms. Ellsworth. Let's assume that one of your competitors, either, is it Latte or Lot, however that's pronounced, either the Appalachia or Pepperidge Farm or someone, decides to take a biscuit, not shaped so closely to your Pocky that it would yield consumer confusion, pretty distinct shape, and they decide to put it on a stick, which is not edible, unlike your product. Would that, in your mind, raise any concern about— let's assume that you win this case and you get a trademark protection here, trade dress protection. Would that raise any concern in your mind as to whether or not that product was an offender?
It would not, Your Honor, because our trade dress does not claim any food product that has a place for you to hold on it. This is, again, why I think the Bowdoin case that I pointed the court to is so useful, because what the Seventh Circuit said there was, just as Bowdoin didn't claim any coffee maker with a handle, it claimed a particular design of a handle. Well, Pocky doesn't claim any food product that has an uncoated portion of the food that you can hold on to. It claims
you said uncoated portion of the food. That's putting the rabbit in the hat. Don't think of it in terms of uncoated portion of the food. It's not food. It's a paper stick or a plastic stick that the biscuit cookie is attached to. You have no problem with that.
That's different. That conveys, I think it would probably have problems as well because of a likelihood of confusion that might present a different.
Let's assume the top is, that's why I said that in my hypothetical, the top is totally distinct in the shape of a pyramid or whatever. Totally distinct shape.
There's no question. And so it's just like in Bowdoin, where the coffee press manufacturer didn't need to prove that handles don't serve a purpose. It needed to prove that its particular design didn't serve a purpose. And here you could have uncoated portions of any thickness, any dimensions, any length, any percentage of the product. The coating could be very thin. It could be very thick. These are all design choices.
All right. So what you want to say is, let's just say we apply the incidental, arbitrary, or ornamental test, all right? I'm not sure you would agree, but if we take it there, you don't claim that having a portion uncoated is incidental, arbitrary, and ornamental. You just want to claim that the collective look and feel with the rounded one end, tapered other end, and the proportions. But if we take it that far, then is a corollary of our holding going to be that it's fine for latte to make a somewhat longer or somewhat thicker stick?
Your Honor, I think that if they made their stick longer or thicker or curved or made the coating a different proportion of the actual product, then we wouldn't be in this case. It's because they exactly want to copy the Pocky product that we're here. And in American-
Is it the product or just an aspect of the product? If they copy the entire product, then there would be a problem. But my understanding is they simply want to you're saying copy, have a product that has a similar kind of configuration insofar as it has a handle or part of it that can be identified as a handle.
Your Honor, it is the exact same product. It is the overall product configuration. It is identical. You can see pictures of the two products in the briefing. They map to each other identically. It's not that they want to just have an uncoated portion or something that they could call a handle on their product. They want a Pocky lookalike, and that is why there is a trade dress problem here.
The biggest problem you have is that the Pepero, the latte product, has a handle on it. Is that accurate? You wouldn't have any objection if it was just a thin, round chocolate stick. What you're focusing on is that latte put a handle on top of it. Is that accurate?
Judge Fuentes, that's not entirely accurate because what we're focusing on is that the overall look of the product is identical. So a piece of that is the fact that there's the same uncoated percentage, but it's also that the entire product looks the same. It's the shape, the width, the diameter, the percentage of coating, the thickness of the coating, all of it is identical.
What if Latte took the product and then they spelled out in yellow letters, Pepero by Latte on the stick, and otherwise it was the same thing? I mean, it doesn't appear that their packaging looks like your packaging. Their packaging looks different. Let's say they extended that and they kept the stick and everything the same, but they put their name prominently on it so that people who pulled it out could see there's yellow lettering on it. How would you have a trade dress problem at that point?
So, Your Honor, I think at that point we would be on, the question would be likelihood of confusion. I don't think that hypothetical you're posing would have any impact on the functionality analysis. The functionality analysis is about whether the design itself performs some useful function or is a design choice. If they add their name to it or some other distinguishing feature that eliminates a likelihood of confusion, that would be a different problem for us to have, but it wouldn't mean that there's a functionality problem. And I think this court's decision in Sweet Streets is worth talking about for a minute, because in Sweet Streets, the court faced a record that it found showed that the shape of pie dough was, quote, essential to the purpose of an effective single serve fruit pie and affected the cost and quality of the pie.
Okay. So it looked. Sweet Street is non-presidential, but still we can, you know, you can argue it to us where it's persuasive, but Sweet Street did not take your narrow approach to what's essential. Sweet Street said the six folds. There's a reason why they did the six folds, right? That was, that just turned out to have the optimal ratio of crusts for baking and stuff like that. So on a really literal understanding of essential, you wouldn't say six folds is essential. But collectively, the decision about the way you made the pie crust was about the way you bake it, the way you put it together. It didn't have some kind of ornamental or identifying trade dress quality to it.
So Your Honor, I think, first of all, that the court did go further than you're suggesting, and it used language like the six folds were, quote, critical to minimizing the cost of the pastry, critical to reducing waste, gave the, quote, best bake, had the, quote, least leakage, and, quote, worked the best in testing. So there was some evidence, not like this case, that this six-fold actually did perform a very specific function. But I also want to make clear that our definition of essential is not quite as narrow as your question suggested. When something is essential to the use or purpose, as the Supreme Court has articulated it and as it has developed in the case law, it means that there is some additional utility that is flowing from the design itself. The product is working better than other products in the same category because of this design. That's what nearly every court, the McCarlades case, the Millennium case from the Ninth Circuit, the Herman Miller case, the Bowdoin case, they've all looked at this question about, is the product working better because of the design than other products in the same category? And that's where the undisputed facts, I think, here show that this is, at best, a disputed question that could go to a jury. And Latte's free to argue to the jury that it should find that it's functional. We're free to argue to the jury that there were significant design choices that went into the length and width and overall product configuration that we chose. And that's something that could be resolved on a jury, perhaps one way or the other. But it's certainly not something that's amenable to resolution and summary judgment. And that's particularly true where we have a presumption in our favor of non-functionality from our incontestable trade dress that's on the principal register.
Why isn't it functional, though? I think I might have addressed this before, that that portion at the top makes it a lot easier to hold and to consume. Why isn't that a functional element of pepper?
Your Honor, I'd point you to what this court said in the American Greetings case, where it said a rule denying protection to a combination of features, including a functional one, would emasculate the law of trade dress infringement.
What page are you reading from?
I don't have the page, Your Honor, but okay. I'd be happy to provide it in my rebuttal. I can pull it up while
I have the PDF in front of me. I'll find it.
Okay. I think that's important because there are a number of cases, including American Greeting, but also Click Billiards case, the Millennium Labs case. Functional features can be incorporated into a trade dress so long as the overall product configuration that is claimed is not functional in its entirety. And the Herman Miller case, I think, our 28J letter, helps make this clear. Every chair is going to have a backrest. That doesn't mean that every chair is going to be functional just because it has a functional element. You're looking at the particular design as it is claimed in the trade dress. And here our claim is much bigger than just the handle. I'd also note that it's a disputed fact whether keeping your hands clean and not touching chocolate is actually a purpose of snack food. Does anyone, I'm imagining everyone on this panel, you may not have eaten Pocky, but you've probably eaten a Snickers bar or a Hershey bar or a Twix bar at some point in your life. You touch chocolate. Even Latte's expert testified that when eating chocolate chip cookies, he gets chocolate and crumbs on his hand. So there's nothing about not touching chocolate that is critical to selling snack food products. Think of Doritos, think of potato chips, barbecue potato chips. Of course, things sometimes get on your hand, but that is not the purpose of a snack food product.
But that's at odds with what you said earlier about it sufficing that something works better. Someone can eat those other things, but some fraction of consumers are going to choose Pocky because they don't want to get it on their hands or because they want to have enough in a box to share with someone. So now you're kind of slithering back towards a narrower understanding of essentiality.
Well, Your Honor, no, I don't think so. I think the essentiality, the first question, and it is one that is disputed in this case, is what is the essential purpose of a snack food? I think both sides think that
it has to be one essential
purpose. I don't know that it does have to be one, but as a matter of undisputed fact here, there are not purposes that the sides have agreed on beyond something being fairly easy to eat, fairly convenient. That is what has, I think, always distinguished, even in sort of common knowledge, a snack food from other foods. You don't need utensils. You can eat it on the go. That's what makes it, you can stick it in your bag. That makes it a snack food. Our expert gave testimony in this case that the overall combination is not functional. You can see that in Dr. Levine's declaration at paragraph 36 of page appendix 2756. And you can see it in Professor Latella's declaration at paragraph 29 to 30 at appendix 2722. So again, there are disputed facts about whether the overall combination here is functional. And in fact, as both of our experts also testified, you can eat Pocky under almost every circumstance. That's an ordinary circumstance for eating, and you won't get chocolate on your hands. Just like you don't get chocolate on your hands when you necessarily eat any product that is fully coated. So the notion of having an uncoated portion is not something that, as a matter of undisputed fact, shows that our product works better. If the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. I have none. Judges Bibas or Fuentes, anything else?
Okay, Your Honors, the district court was clearly correct to find there's no genuine issue of material fact that the Pocky configuration is essential to the use or purpose of a snack and is functional as a matter of law. Let's remember here what we're talking about. We've been talking for, I think, a little over half an hour about a product that consists of two features, a generic biscuit stick, which they admit doesn't constitute their trade dress, and it partially, mostly covered in chocolate. That's what we're talking about. Those are the features. So it's very important, Your Honors, look at their trade dress, okay, how they define it. There is no limitation on the dimensions of the product, the width of the product, the length of the product. So it's just an overall, if it's a biscuit stick, there's no limitation on how wide it has to be or how narrow it has to be. And there's no limitations on how much chocolate there has to be on it or doesn't have to be on it. All it has to do is be a generic biscuit stick and mostly covered in chocolate.
Ms. Althaus makes an excellent argument. If you look at them and you look at the packaging and you look at the stick, they're virtually identical. The photo in the front of the packaging is very similar. Why isn't that entitled to trademark protection? They look identical way.
That may be true, Your Honor, but that has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not the product. The Supreme Court has said, as we quoted in the Samara case, that product design. Almost invariably, even the most unusual product designs do not serve to identify source. And that's why when you're talking about product designs, product configuration designs, in order to show protection, you have to show that the product is non-functional. And here, the product configuration is clearly functional and there's no dispute it's functional.
All right, Mr. Dabney, now I understandably secondary meaning is a somewhat distinct issue, but what do you say to Ms. Ellsworth saying that Bruce Isaacson did a survey before the 1989 PTO registration that this had, it had some secondary meaning. It, in the eyes of consumers, this served to identify the source as Zaki Glico.
It's legally irrelevant. Whether or not something has secondary meaning or not, a product configuration is, as a matter of law, legally irrelevant to whether or not it's functional, that is essential to the use or purpose of the product, or relates to the cost or quality of the product. That's because of the public policy that you can only protect product configurations through patents and copyrights. If it's not protected by patent or copyright, it's usually, and this is from the Supreme Court, it's usually in traffic, must subsist, trade dress protection must subsist, that in many instances, there is no prohibition against copying goods and services. So almost invariably, even the most unusual product designs, this is the Supreme Court, are not intended to identify source.
But which case are you quoting from?
I'm quoting from the first case is Graphics 532 U.S. at 29, and then Walmart versus Tamara, 529 U.S. at 213.
Okay, so what do you make of the photos at pages 34 to 35 of Appellant's brief? How is this different? Would you say that the Hershey's chocolate bar necessarily falls, or the Andes mint? They're probably the least distinctive images there. Do they fall, or are they distinguishable from this?
Well, the first thing I would say is they're completely irrelevant because no case has ever litigated them. I mean, the PTO will register basically a ham sandwich if you wanted to register a ham sandwich. There's been no adjudication of those trade dresses by any court. I don't know whether why those designs are like that. I don't know if there's a utility patent. I don't know if those companies tout that the configuration serves some utilitarian function. I don't know what the founders of those products said. We chose this product to be this way because it's easier to eat. But this is what we do know, Your Honor, something Judge Bevis, you said earlier today, it's undisputed. In this case, we know the answers to those questions. In this case, Glyco's own internal documents say, we chose the biscuit stick because it's easy to hold, and we covered it partially with chocolate so there's a handle. And that's the end of the case. Let's go through the advertising. My friend on the other side talked about the advertising. Here, let's really go through the advertising and see what it says. Here, I'm reading from volume two of the joint appendix. Here we go, appendix 424. These are all requests for admissions about what's on Glyco's website, what they tell consumers about the reasons why the biscuit is thin and why it's partially covered in chocolate. That's all we're talking about. Those are the features.
What's the page? Here, the PDF page.
424, request number 11. Appendix 2, 424, appendix, yeah. Two, request number 11. Okay. Let's just go through this. Admit that your Pocky cookie sticks have been described as having a quote, no mess handle, unquote, on your website, Pocky.com. There's objection here, which is irrelevant. And then they go over to the next page, subject to the objection. Glyco admits that the language recited in the request has appeared on its website. Okay, so they do advertise that the cookie stick has a no mess handle on their website. Let's go to page 426 of the joint appendix. These are requests for admissions. 426, request number four. Admit that you have referred to your Pocky cookie sticks as, and quote, easy to handle stick, easy to handle stick, stick your chocolate off your hands on your website, Pocky.com. Response, Glyco admits that the language in the request has appeared on its website. Let's go to appendix number 427, request for number 17. Admit that you have referred to your Pocky cookie sticks as the snack with a handle on your website at, you know, PockyGlyco.com. Azaki Glyco admits that the language recited in the request has appeared on its website. Let's go to page 430 of the joint appendix. Request number 23. Admit you have described that your Pocky cookie stick as, quote, easy to handle, unquote, on your website, Pocky Glyco Info Product. Response, Glyco admits that the language in the request has appeared on the website. Let's go to appendix 430, page 431, request number 26.
admit that you have described the Pocky cookie stick as, quote, generously coated with a high quality chocolate, except for a small portion at one end, creating a handle, making it easier for multitasking without getting chocolate on your hands, unquote, on your website, PockyGlyco.com. What's the response to that? Is Pocky Glyco admits that the language in the request appears. Request number 29 on appendix 433. Admit that you have described your Pocky cookie sticks as being, quote, in the beginning, hand dipped in chocolate, leaving one end of the stick, quote, the handle bare, unquote, on your website, Pocky.com. What's the response?
All right. All right. We get the point.
We do get it. Yeah.
On and on, on and on and on. The advertising. It's they selected. This is what we know. In this case, the evidence is undisputed. Their own documents, their own advertising. They selected the shape, the generic biscuit shape, because it's easy to hold. They partially coated it so that customers wouldn't get chocolate on their hands. That's what we know, an undisputed fact. We also know it's an undisputed fact. They've been advertising for decades and decades the true reasons why they selected the stick and why they chose partially to coat it, because it's easy to hold and because so you don't get chocolate on your hands when you eat it.
Let me take you to a different question.
Sure.
Let me agree with you about that part of it, but we think you're overreading the relevance of the utility patent. This isn't a different posture from traffics. The utility patent comes up very late in the game, long after this, et cetera. The district court rested its holding on three points, and one of those was the utility patent. Do you want to defend that before us or say that it's not essential to the district court's ruling?
I don't know if it, well, first of all, the district court was right to rely on a couple things. Let me just.
You said rely. Rely on the utility.
Rely. It found that it supported. It was additional evidence.
Right, okay.
Let's go through that because one of the things that struck me in this case is the way that the district court's opinion was just repeatedly mischaracterized with regard to what it did with the utility patent. And I want to go through this because it's important for the, I want to explain this to the court. Okay, let's go through Glyco's opening brief, okay? Throughout their opening brief, they say they mischaracterized, repeated at least 8 times what the district court did with respect to the patent, and it came. Okay, we're talking about page 5. This is what Glyco says in its opening brief. The district court put, quote, great evidentiary weight on Glyco's utility patent. That's false. Page 16, district court held that.
Why don't you just, instead of making this a tit for tat with opposing counsel, whom we all presume acted in good faith, why don't you take us to the portions in the district court opinion to support your reading?
Let's go to let's go to the joint appendix at 20 and 21, 20 through 23. Okay. The district court held, here I'm quoting, Glyco's utility patent and patent application further support a finding that Glyco's trade dress is functional. Didn't say it was positive. Page 23, considering all of the evidence in the record, including Glyco's utility patent, the court finds that no particular reasonable juror could find Glyco's trade dress to be merely arbitrary, incidental, or ornamental. So there's no basis for these repeated claims that the district court gave positive weight, heightened evidentiary weight to anything that's in the patent. That said, it did rely on the patent. It was right to rely on the patent, and it could have given this.
You're saying relied? You mean consider? Because you're seeing
considered as evidence, as additional evidence to show what is very obvious, which is that a thin stick is easy to hold and easy to eat, which is exactly what was said in the patent. Let's go to the right. Let's go to the patent. Here's the patent. This is what they told the USPTF. This is the interesting thing. Internally, they tell themselves one thing about this product. They all know internally the product was designed to be chosen to be the way it is for functional purposes. They know that internally. That's what they tell consumers, and that's what they told the PTO. Let's go to the patent. That they told the district court, they repeatedly said the district court was just positive analysis. This is the joint appendix, volume 3. It starts at 1006. Okay. What's the title of it? Stick, shape, snack, and method for producing thing. Okay. Then if you go to appendix 114, that's page and then 4, lines starting with 39. Here they say, this is Glyco. This is what Glyco told the PTO. This is what Glyco told the patent office when it was trying to get its patent. Takes totally different position now, but this is what they told the PTO and what the PTO reported. Stick-shaped snacks having a maximum cross-sectional width of 2.5 to 3.5 millimeters are thinner than conventional-shaped snacks and thus are very easy to eat and have an enjoyable new texture, encouraging consumers to buy.
Mr. Dabney, I thought that patent was only really about the ultra-slim Pocky, which is a tiny fraction of the overall market.
No, Your Honor. Well, first, that's correct. But the way, again, this is critical. The way they've defined their trade dress, there is no limitation on the width. So yes, maybe it's only 2% of their sales or 1% of their sales, but they've defined their trade dress so broadly. There are no limits to the dimensions. There are in the patent, but they're not in the trade dress registration. So that their claim, the way they've defined their trade dress in this case, literally reads or applies to every Pocky stick that anyone could make that's 2.5 millimeters, 2.51 millimeters, 2.52, 2.6, 2.7, 2.5, I mean, just an unlimited swath of configurations. That's how they've defined their trade dress. We asked them, are there any limits to the dimensions in your trade dress? Width, length? The answer is no.
Well, okay, maybe that goes to what we draw from the registration, because trade dress protection is not limited to ones that are registered. It just affects who has the burden of proof. So maybe we need to, maybe Ms. Ellsworth's response would be something about, well, you know, the rounded handle here and the tapered edge there and the rough length and the rough diameter. Maybe that would affect how we apply the registration.
Can I talk about that? Because that would be impermissible to say that. At the beginning of every one of these stray dress cases, the first thing you do is you ask the plaintiff, and Judge Fuentes knows this from the Fairwinds case, you ask the plaintiff, what is it that is your trade dress? Identify it for us, please, so we know precisely what it is you're claiming. And that's what we did in this case. And then we followed up and said, what are the limitations on the dimensions of your trade dress? The length of the stick, the width of the stick. The answer is there are not. So Ms.
Ellsworth told us earlier that she didn't think there would be a problem if someone sold a longer stick or a fatter stick or something else.
She said that, but that's not what the trade dress says, Your Honor. We have to go, this case boils down to how they have defined their trade dress. That's pawn to king four. That's square one in a trade dress case. If you're defending it, you ask the defendant, the plaintiff, what is it you're claiming? We asked them, they said there are no limits. Now she won't have limits, which I understand, because the trade dress as it's defined by them has no limits and literally reads on an unlimited number of width stick that they claim in the patent. So they've defined their trade dress to include not just 2% of the products they happen to be selling, but any product that anyone else wanted to sell, that's between 2.6, 2.7, 2.8. It's an unlimited swath of products that they admit are functional. They claimed this product. They claimed a biscuit stick that has cross-sectional width of 2.5 to 3.5 millimeters in the patent. I mean, that's what claim 14 says, a stick made by the method of claim one. Claim one, an invention, a method for producing a stick-shaped snack comprising blah, blah, blah. You know, you get down to this on six, you get down to like line 55 or something, stick-shaped pastries having a maximum cross-sectional width of 2.5 millimeters to 3.5 millimeters.
We do understand your argument, Mr. Dapney. It's been very forcefully and very clearly made. And yeah, you're way over your time. Ms. Osborne's go a bit over also.
Can I say one other thing, Your Honor?
Why don't we hear from Ms. Osborne? We really understand your argument. You made it as thoroughly as anyone possibly could. And why don't we hear from what Ms. Osborne has to say? Ms. Osborne?
A few points to make. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my computer was telling me I was muted, so I wanted to confirm. First, the page I was citing from American Greetings about no functional features being included would emasculate trade dress protection. It's at 1143.
Yeah, I found it.
Great. The second point that I want to make relates to the patent that Mr. Dabney was just speaking to you about. This is very important, and I don't know if Mr. Dabney thinks that because you guys are not the Federal Circuit, you won't appreciate patent law. Claim 14 is a dependent claim. It does not claim a biscuit that is 2.5 to 3.5 millimeters thick writ large. It claims this is a kind of claim in a patent that's called a product by process claim. It only claims a biscuit made by a particular manufacturing process. Make it by any other process, it's not claimed in the patent. This case is like McCarlade's. In McCarlade's, there was also a manufacturing patent, and it's really the only other case that's cited in the briefs that involves a patent like ours, one that claims a method and then the product that results from that method. That is very different than claiming the product. And Mr. Dabney's reference to the title of the patent is misleading. I think that's what misled the district court judge. This patent in claim 14 does not claim shaped snacks. It claims a particular snack resulting from a particular method and that method only. I want to briefly respond to the suggestion that there are no limitations on the width or the length in this trade dress. There are absolutely limitations. If Latte wanted to make a competing product that was an inch and a half wide and an inch and a half long, but only part of it was covered with chocolate, go for it. It would look nothing like ours. There would be no likelihood of confusion. It is because they want to mimic the exact proportions that are set out in our trade dress that there is a problem. The Bowdoin case, which I mentioned to you in my opening, the Bowdoin case, I think, is particularly helpful because it shows that a party with a handle, and in that case, it clearly is a handle, a coffee pot handle. The question is not whether having a handle is useful, but whether having this designed handle is useful. So even if you think having a handle, having an uncoated portion of a snack product is useful, does it have to look like this one, as opposed to having a curve, being thicker, being thinner, being larger, being smaller? All of those are design choices. Finally, on the PTO registering a ham sandwich, I think you all know that's not true, but it is worth noting that Latte itself sought to register its product, implicitly telling the PTO that it viewed its exact identical product configuration as non-functional. And the PTO rejected it, not because it was functional, but because Glico already had trade dress protection for that exact product configuration. So for all of these reasons, as a matter of undisputed fact, the district court erred in how it approached functionality. It erred in the weight that it placed on the patent in this case. It erred in not addressing the overall product configuration and in focusing on one particular aspect, the uncoated portion, to the detriment of the rest of it. For all of these reasons, I'm happy to answer further questions, but we would ask that you reverse the summary judgment order and remand this case for trial.
Okay, thank you. Judge Bibas, anything further?
Nothing further, thank you.
Judge Fuentes?
No, nothing for me.
Okay, and I can tell, what I was gonna suggest is that you submit a 28J letter. So we can wrap up. We will certainly consider anything you submit to us after the argument in the form of a 28J letter, and we will be happy to consider it. It's been extraordinarily well argued by
Does the 28J letter include? Yeah, I mean, one of the things I want to point out is that their own expert admitted that.
Okay, well, put that in the, because now we're back into argument. Put that in the 28J letter, okay? I know 28J, the rule in its text is a bit confined, but I think we're interested in anything additional you want to say in response to Ms. Ellsworth. Ms. Ellsworth, if you want to bring any points to our attention, please do that in the letter, okay? And it's not going to be rejected because it doesn't comply with the technical parameters of 28J.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Great seeing you.
Thank you, counsel. I ask you to disconnect.
Oh, a transcript. Please. Definitely get a transcript. Can you
direct
them with that?
And yes, clerk's office staff will be in touch with counsel.
Okay.